I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to Lunch and Rouge Cycling Podcast, presented by Zwift, for an impromptu transfers recap part two, because on the eve of La Vuelta, perhaps a bit of gamesmanship from some of the teams, I would say some of the highest profile riders on the market have been announced as transferring. Richard Carapaz, Ineos riders, two of them. We'll get to Jumbo-Visma with Kelderman and Van Baal. But before we get to that, I mention our show partner, Zwift, Zwift Academy. It's back and registration is open for 2022. Whether you're aiming for a pro contract like Jay Vine, who's here in the Vuelta for Alpecin de Koenig, or Neve Bradbury, or just looking to kickstart your fitness with some structured sessions, Zwift Academy will help you get fitter and have more fun on the bike. There are 6 workouts to complete, either solo or in group workouts, with baseline rides to compare your progress before and after. Zwift Academy. Thanks, as always, to Zwift for supporting the show. Carapaz is the big one. Off to EF Education Easy Post. Look like Daniel Benson at Velo News had a coordinated embargo with the press officer or with Vorders. He had his long-form piece written, ready, released 10 minutes before the EF announcement, saying this could be the most successful transfer of the decade. We'll see about that. Three-year deal. 29 years old Carapaz at Ineos. He won the Giro at Movistar. He was fourth in the Giro in 2018. He won stages in both 18-19 Giro on Ineos. Tour de France 2020. He got kind of shafted because Thomas wasn't in shape. He got dragged in. He was supposed to do the Giro. Vuelta, shafted again. No teammates. Came second on bonus seconds to Roglic. Last year, third in the Tour. I don't really see how he could have done too much better. And then he DNF'd the Vuelta. And then this year, second in the Giro. Hindley beat him on Fedaya. In terms of wins at Ineos, it was the Olympics. But that wasn't in Ineos colours. He won Tour de Suisse last year with a stage. He won a stage at Polonia in 20 and a stage in Catalunya this year. So he's a consistent Grand Tour performer, Benji, but a 3-year deal. I see this as the Uran replacement. It's hard to see it as anything else other than that.
I agree with that. And the initial reaction I have is, good, we're balancing out cycling a bit. We're putting a GC podium contender into a team that, in my opinion, when it comes to the Tour de France, didn't have one. I didn't see Hugh Coffey as a Tour de France podium contender. When it comes to Chavez, neither. Uran, not anymore. So that team was lacking that for me. Nelson Paulus also not on that level. With Carapaz being removed from Ineos and added to the team of Yev, we've got that extra team hunting for a podium in a Grand Tour is what I would say as a goal for that team with this transfer. And next to that, let's analyze both EF and Ineos after this transfer, okay? Let's take a look at EF first. They get Carapaz as leader. Uran's out of contract. I'm guessing that that's the end for Uran at EF unless he finds an agreement that is not much money, which, I don't know, is there a team that would be interested in taking on Rigoberto Uran after 2022, after this season?
I mean, if I was him, I would stay at EF. They let him do the Grand Fondo stuff. He's got his own apparel. I think he's got his own business stuff. And he literally doesn't race or isn't in top shape for 90% of the year. And EF have been okay with that seemingly. So if I was him, I'd stay at EF. What team would want Uran? Can he provide certain points? He can't provide certain wins. Can he even guarantee you a top 10 GC at the Tour de France? No. So, and he's 35. It's curious the parallels. He was signed when he was 29 at EF when they were Cannondale. Carapaz is 29. He podiumed the Tour de France. He came second to Uran in 2017 when he was, I think, 30, the second year of that contract. So I think that's what EF are looking for. They got the three. It's for the whole of the next 3-year point cycle if the points remain. Carapaz, even if he doesn't win the Tour, top five GC at both World Tour 1 weeks and Grand Tours provide a huge amount of points. And I would say, generally speaking, the top GC guys are undervalued. Like, you'd be like, okay, Carapaz, I don't know what he's getting paid. Vought, as I said in the Velo News article about how he had to go and get extra money from EF, get their sign off. So he's not on the Olympic champion. He's not on pennies. But there's a lot of guys on 700K, 800K who don't win races, who don't top 10 World Tour races, can go 2 years without winning a dot pro stage and don't contribute to winning. Whereas, you know, Carapaz, like, he should, in theory, still be in the prime of his career. Are you worried that he, like, do you sense any decline with Carapaz? Does it, what happened in the Giro concern you? Or do you see him as still a, he should be the favorite to podium any Grand Tour he enters just about?
Favorite for a podium, that's a difficult one, eh? Because, like, when it comes to the Tour de France, we've got some top-notch hitters for it. Roglic, Vingegaard, we've got Pogacar. Those are three riders I rate above Carapaz, for example. But for other Grand Tours, we usually have a podium favorites group that Carapaz would fit into and would be a rider that is set to podium a Grand Tour that doesn't have those three big hitters on the start line. So I see Carapaz as a podium contender for any Grand Tour he lines up with, but it's going to be harder in the Tour de France than in any other Grand Tour in the season, is what I'd say for now. Obviously, let's say Remco does actually destroy La Vuelta, like you have happening in your dreams every single night until the Vuelta happened. And that would change things, because that's an extra contender that would be significant for Grand Tours in the future. So there's always that danger that an Ayuso, that an Evenepoel, that an Almeida, that those riders step up and become better than a Carapaz when it comes to the podiuming of Grand Tours. But when it comes to Carapaz himself, I don't necessarily see him becoming weaker over the last 2 years. Yes, he won that Movistar Giro back in the day, but I still believe that was a mistake by Nibali on the stage, where Carapaz took most of the points, where Nibali basically only focused on Roglic, expecting Roglic to be his all-out contender for that Grand Tour, and it backfired completely with Carapaz taking loads of time and eventually being unable to take back all the time towards Carapaz by the end of the Grand Tour. And when it comes to the Vuelta, where Carapaz almost beat Roglic, again, if he has a better team there by Ineos, he wins that Grand Tour, in my opinion. But also next to that, was that Roglic at top level in that Vuelta, or was that at the end of tiredness, Roglic?
He wasn't top level, and also it was in November, so it was colder and rainier. If it's in hot conditions, he's going to have less problems. That random stage, was that the race where the jacket thing was? Yeah, like that, you know, November Vuelta, like Carthy, I think, prefers the cold. He did better in that Vuelta, weird Vuelta. That being said, there haven't been many options on the market. There's two guys that were on the market in for 2023 who have podiumed a Grand Tour in the last two, three years. Kelderman, 31, and Carapaz. I don't know the price difference. I would assume, is there anyone else? Nibali?
Did Vincenzo Nibali do it in the last 3 years? But hey, he's retiring, but maybe if you put enough money on the table, did he? I don't know. Probably not. In the last 4 years, maybe. Not 3 years. Damn it.
2019 Giro, different era, pre-COVID, different time. Kelderman versus Carapaz. If I'm EF, it makes more sense to sign Carapaz, even if he's more expensive. Kelderman's less reliable in terms of crashing and points, one would think. Like, for example, this year, like, I like Kelderman as a rider. I think he's underrated, but the results are what they are. Torino 19th, Valenciana DNF, Giro 17th, Dauphiné 28th, Burgos 9th. Although that's being said, like, he was instrumental for Hindley on sort of for stage 14, but that is not Carapaz.
Yep. Carapaz also is able to win stages, which Kelderman has difficulties with. Let's just say that. But next to that, like, if we take a look at what is surrounding him in 2023 IDF, let's talk about that aspect of that team. In all honesty, it is a relatively decent climbing squad. It's not a godlike climbing squad. It depends on who you send with him to the Grand Tour that Carapaz is supposed to podium, because will EF send Garfi and Carapaz to the same Grand Tour, for example, or will they split them up? That is a question that I'm asking myself. Are they going to send them both to the same Grand Tour, to the Tour de France, for example, with the Venezuelan, Ecuador. Oh my God, I'm getting the countries wrong. The Ecuador people in there as well. Caicedo, Cepeda, those riders. Yeah. Cepeda signed as well by EF. So I don't know, that's three Ecuadorians. But is he completely useless or can he be part of a climbing train?
I mean, what climb can someone that's 53 kilos help on that doesn't have the same raw watts per kilo as Jonas? Like, I'm sure he could be fine, but like, yeah, he's signed because he's Ecuadorian, like, and he's on Androni, and his agent, I haven't looked, I bet you it's a quadro. I bet you any money. So that is what it is. Caicedo is not a bad rider, but I think, yeah, like, Paulus is the one. Do you split him with Carapaz? It'll depend on the parkour. Like, if the Tour de France has loads of time trial kilometers, do you really want to send Carapaz, or is the Giro, like, with a softer start list, like the Vuelta style's really hard, will you send him to the Giro? Guerrero is the one. Guerrero and Chavez are out of contract, I think, at EF Benji. Guerrero's having a career year. Do you re-sign? I think you let Chavez go and you try and re-sign Guerrero. That's what I would do.
I would do so as well. I don't necessarily see the resurgence of Chavez that people would have hoped for at EF so far. Yeah, he had, last year was when he had a decent day in Catalonia one of those Spanish races. We haven't really seen that this year either, in my personal opinion. And like, looking at Guerrero, when you look at that guy's season so far, he had a good season. Like, we can say all we want about it, but even in Burgos, Flesch was a great result, but even in Burgos, like, sixth being in Burgos, we take a look at ninth in the Dauphiné. This was a breakaway stage hunter last year. He grew into a GC rider this year, and that's significant to the point where, is he going to end up willing to work for Carapaz? He's going to have to if he stays at the team, that's quite sure, but there's so many questions about it, you know? I think they should re-sign Guerrero. I think he's very much on point. Or do you think that there's external interest in a rider like Rubén Guerrero? Because
I'm a different team... UAE? He rode for Almeida in 2021 Giro, right? I mean, serious. Yeah. Like, he actually, like, was doing that for Almeida. Like, that would be, with Costa gone, he's probably the best Portuguese rider on the market. That would make sense. What's interesting, Benji, is I wonder if the relegation battle has made Rubén Guerrero a shitload of money, where he normally would have been forced to stage hunt, or that would have been his plan. And instead, he's gone to chase top 10s in GCs, like a ninth at the Dauphiné, which isn't that appealing marketing-wise, but that gets you paid. And so now he's been sent to Mont Ventoux Challenge. I'm not sure if EF always did that. He won that. Like, I feel like the relegation stuff might have helped his pay packet next year. So EF, there's a lot of sort of nice pieces always at EF. I always like each rider they sign individually, like a Steinhauser, Padun signing. Sure, I like them all. I do worry about how their pieces always fit together. The Classics team with Volger and injured, and with, I think he's looking, unfortunately, like that was a very serious crash and injury. Their Classics team hinges almost entirely on Bettiol and Paulus, who also goes for GC. So that's looking really light for next year. They just need a lot of guys to progress. Iking, did he have sickness or something? Healy's got to progress. The Vandenbergs, Marin Vandenberg gets sent to the wrong races. I don't know.
The question I have after this entire EF discussion, I think we completed like the EF discussion here. When it comes to Ineos, where does this transfer of Carapaz to EF leave Ineos? What effect does it have on Ineos? Does this mean that Ineos did they let him go, or did EF pay more than Ineos would have paid for
Carapaz,
for example? It depends on the money.
Well, let's say it's 3 mil. It's like big boy GC contender, top 5 GC contender in the world money. 3 mil, 3.5 mil. Could be
I don't think so. I think I'd rather secure Rodriguez than match 3 million Carapaz. No?
I agree. And Rodriguez doesn't cost 3 million. Well, I guess like at the moment, he hasn't got the results to demand that contract. So I would rather, I agree, it's... But then who are they sending to the Giro? You'd have to have faith in Gegenhardt to step up to leadership again. We haven't seen that since 2020 Giro. I'm not looking at their roster. You have to have faith that Bernal comes back. Like mm-hmm. a lot of things have to fall into place for you to... It's like Benji when Lefebvre was like, I'll let Bennett go because I trust Fabio's coming back. He took a calculated risk. It paid off in a big way. I think that's at play for Ineos. There's a lot of guys hunting for opportunities. And yeah, with Carlos Rodriguez, Benji, Movistar would literally roll out the red carpet. They might not match salary, but they're like, we'll give you any race you want, leadership, any race you want. You can have it. And, you know, versus if you've got Carapaz for the next 3 years stifling his opportunity. So I'm not surprised that Ineos let him go. They're in a rebuilding phase. You see these things happen in cycles. Carapaz, and it's a curious move on to our next team, the classic sort of version maybe of Carapaz, you know, Dylan van Baarle, maybe that, well, their best classics rider perhaps, but their oldest, one of their older ones, in terms of the leader, Rose maybe a bit older, van Baarle off to Jumbo Visma, winner of Paris-Roubaix this year on Ineos. Ineos had a great, well, pretty good classic season. Again, it's kind of like he would have presumably been wanting a big contract at Ineos after that, after Paris-Roubaix, or maybe not. Are you surprised to see him, 30 years old, not a regular winner, off to Jumbo-Visma, who already have pretty stacked classic squad?
It's difficult, you know, because if we look at the dynamics of the cobble squad of Jumbo-Visma this year, it was already a very strong squad with Laporte, with Van Aert, obviously. Let's not forget about Wout Van Aert in this cobble squad. If you add Van Baarle to that, I would argue that the chances of all three to win a race increase. And you would say, well, how is that possible? How is Van Baarle going to that team, increasing his chances of winning when he might not even be leader? I'd expect them to be three co-leaders on the cobble squad. And perhaps Laporte might be taking a bit of a bad step there. Like, if Van Baarle goes to the team with Van Aert, I think Laporte is the one that takes the biggest hit. Or am I wrong in that?
Van Baarle can't sprint, so Laporte can sprint. Mm. So Laporte, you can be happier going in a smaller group. Van Baarle needs to go solo, like he did in Roubaix. His season, second in Flanders, first at Roubaix, good, probably Domestique in Amstel, which Ineos also won with Kwiatkowski, eighth in E3, which Jumbo dominated. We haven't mentioned him as a stage racing Domestique, Benji. He did the Tour de Suisse, Tour de France, and he's doing the Vuelta this year. He's been a busy boy. I see him more for their classics team. I think, because when I think of their Tour de France squad, we both think Roglic and Jonas should rinse and repeat. I almost wouldn't change the team from this year. It depends on the parkour, obviously, but I would rather have Van Baarle focus on the best classic season, which Jumbo-Visma didn't win a monument in spring this year. It was the missing piece of their season. Focused on classics in spring, and Benoit was really good. Really, really good in the Tour de France. Now, Van Baarle has probably done in his career in 2018 some better climbing performances, but no, it was really good. I would rather he focus on, as you said, the classics. And yeah, like Paris-Roubaix is a great example. Someone to make sure, Wout van Aert needs to learn a little bit perhaps to ride with someone like Van Baarle. He doesn't need to close attacks. He doesn't need to push on the front. Let Van Baarle initiate things as well. But yeah, he's Dutch. He's 30. He's still in his prime. He's got good years. And it makes sense from a marketing perspective. What do you expect? Like, do you think he will be sacrificing opportunities, or do you think they will go with like the multi-leader stuff, even in the classics?
I believe they should go for multi-leader strategies in the classics. I think that's what works a lot of the time when it comes to Quickstep in the past. And the stronger Quickstep became, the more dominant they were because they were strong in the whiff. And if one rider, one leader has a bad day, if one leader crashes into a ditch like Laporte in RVV, you've got an extra leader next to that that can pick up the pieces where they are left off with. And there's also the aspect of strategy in those races. Van Baarle is indeed the rider that goes relatively early in races and tries to benefit from group dynamics. And we saw that in Roubaix, like you mentioned, he attacked away in a situation where Van der Poel and Van Aert were in the same group. And I think it was also when Van Aert had punctures and so forth. But basically, Van der Poel and Van Aert had to respond to every attack that happened in those groups. And certainly, they look at each other to close a gap. And now with Van Aert being in that group, Van Baarle could either attack if a rider, a stronger sprinter, is still in the group there. Like a Pedersen, for example. If Pedersen is in the group with Van Aert, in that situation, Van Baarle can try and attack away while Van Aert is a second option, the sprinting option, while they put Pedersen under pressure at the end of a Roubaix, for example. That's the situations I've got in my head there. And I think that benefits every single rider from that. There's also the factor to it. Like you spoke about the Grand Tour schedule for Van Baarle. Is there an effect? This is a conspiracy theory by Benji Nassen written right now. Do you think there is a possibility that Jumbo-Visma is also thinking, if we get Van Baarle to our team, he's very strong in the Cobble Classic, he strengthens us there, he's an option to become a Dennis-like character in a Grand Tour, to be that domestique that Dennis couldn't be this year because he was injured, basically, or ill before the Tour de France, but they're also taking away strength from Ineos. Is there a possibility? Important. Okay.
Ineos, apart from Pidcock, we will remains to be seen what he does in the Classics next year, breakout Classics season last year. Ineos relied in Rabanne-Sepeil, in Paris-Roubaix, in Amstel Gold Race. They relied on multi-leaders. It was Pidcock and Kvyat more so in Amstel. But Paris-Roubaix, it was Turner and Van Baarle, right, in that last group. Mm-hmm. And they used their whole... And so this is their strongest Classics rider across all the Classics, Van Baarle.
Sheffield is coming.
Yeah, he's coming, but, like, would you say next year... Like, Fred Wright came 10th in RVV. No one ever... Oh, top 10, people forget that. Like, can we pencil in Sheffield for 5th at RVV next year? Maybe,
yes,
but
I'm calling okay, it.
You're penciling it in, but Van Baarle literally came second this year. Now, that was because Pogacar kind of messed up the finish. But when you think about now the teams in those spring classics, is Alaphilippe going to focus on them as much next year, or is he going to focus on his Ardennes? Because his Ardennes wasn't as good this year. And then that means it's right now for Quickstep, if Remco's not doing the Cobble Classics, it's all on Asgreen. So that's one leader. And then UAE is all Pog. And then Ineos is a lot on Pidcock. And then Jumbo are coming with Laporte. Tratnik, maybe. Is that confirmed?
I think it
rumored
was
by Vilaflits, probably.
Yeah, exactly.
Who also came top 10 RVV? Van Baarle and Van Aert. That's a multi-headed monster against these teams with single leaders. Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah, certainly a problem in that effect. And the thing is with Quickstep as well, we don't know how strong they're going to be next year compared to this year with all the stuff they had going on, like you mentioned. I don't think we can blame Alaphilippe having a weaker LBL by ending up in the ditch by the side of the road and being injured.
No, but I mean, that disappointment will mean he's like, I've got to focus on Ardennes.
Yeah, I get that. And it's been a while since he won LBL, right? Because
Never won LBL.
He was supposed to win it until he put his hands in the air too early. After he chopped Hirschi and Pogacar? Yeah.
That was the closest he's come.
The closest he's come was first over the line. Yeah. No, he was second.
The second over the line and then relegated to fifth. But yeah, I think weakening competitors and then the marketing benefit. And it's the same thing with the Carapaz move. Ineos are like, all right, we got Sheffield, Pidcock, Klock, got all these guys wanting leadership next year. Should we match Van Baarle? Is that the best use of our money? Maybe not. That's probably, and he probably wants to go to a Dutch team, or maybe he doesn't. I don't know, but he's going there. Another move from Bora Hansgrohe, going home. He was on Lotto NL Jumbo. He's on Belkin, Rabobank Continental back in the day, Wilco Kelderman, one of my favorites, third in GC at the Giro 2020, fourth in the Vuelta 2017, fifth at the Tour 2021 last year, good result. Like, so many top 10s, like he's got that crazy statistic about how many World Tour top 10s he has without a win, especially for a guy, he's not Kreuzweig, he's quite fast in a punchy uphill sprint. That's what's crazy, but if you look at the Circuito de Getxo finish, you see why he hasn't won a lot of road races, the way he played that against Ayuso and Piccolo, who we forgot to talk about at EF. But he's just a nice rider. EF signed it, everyone overlooked because Gazprom folded, which wasn't his fault because of the war in Ukraine. But he's most talented, or was most talented under 20 or Italian junior. And he looks really good.
There's more about him, in my opinion, because it's a longer story when it comes to Piccolo. If we look at the way Piccolo's history is in the grand scheme of things, he was signed at Astana back in the day and was hindered by injuries before he ended up being dropped by Astana, maybe a mutually terminated with Astana. It was never disclosed what the injury or illness was that he was going through, but that's his privacy. We don't need to dive too much more into that. And then after, he basically rode for the Italian national team and a club team in Italian classics, doing well at the Veneto Classic, got great results there, and these results got him signed at Gazprom, which at Gazprom, you know what happened, you just explained what happened, the Russian war stuff, and eventually he ended up on no team, going back to Dronehopper, and at Dronehopper he finally got to prove himself at the Spanish races, that finally got him into EF. So this man has not had luck at all when it comes to his signing.
I know, and Gianni Savio, he was on Androni for 6 weeks. I bet you Savio, if he had a buyout clause in there, would have been the best bit of business. I mean, I said, yeah. I circulated this at the time. I was like, when Gazprom folded in, I was like a vulture. I was looking through their team list. I was like, who has got something here? Varchek's been signed. I circulated around. I was like, Piccolo. Someone's got to take a chance on this guy. He's from the right country. Like, he's bucking the trend, Benji. Usually Italians that can pedal under 25, Trek is like, would you like 5 years? Like, what's going on? And no one picked him up. And I was like, the results are good. Now, maybe a difficult character. I don't know. Like, it didn't make sense to me. And yeah, someone should have signed him, stashed him on their dev team, giving him a 6-year deal, put an outrageous buyout clause in there, and just developed him and taken him to the World Tour squad. And they didn't. And EF, it's a nice signing. I think he's really good. He might do nothing. He's super young. He might have team issues. But, like, you always look for the guys. Are they getting some sort of results at under 22 years of age in actual open UCI races when shit's not going their way? Like Veneto, I know it's not the biggest race, it's October, but like stuff's not gone his way. He's on the Italian team and he's still getting results. Like that's someone, anyway, honed in on. That's a self-pat on the back. But yeah, Piccolo, nice sign from EF. Being too nice to Vortis on this podcast. I came into it thinking I was going to roast the signs and I was like, yep, like it. And it's like, fuck.
what's the dude on Gazprom that was good when he comes to sprinting? Did he get any future?
It was Conchi on Gazprom.
The
Malicelli?
Malicelli. Yeah. Any news about him? Because I haven't heard much about him personally.
He picked up a pro contract, I think, and he is on China Glory and actually won a stage of Sicilia, or was that when he was still on Gazprom? No, Italy, that was on team. China Glory. So he came fifth at Arctic Race. But he's like a journeyman Conti sprinter. Anyway. Wilco Kelderman, journeyman World Tour top 10 getter, returns back to Jumbo-Visma. What role do you see for him, Benji? Because Jumbo-Visma, they got the headliners. Roglic, Vingegaard, who else for GC? Like, there is a big... Omen's not it. Kreuzweig's folded into a domestique
Foss,
role. Foss hasn't shown it. Did they need another guy for a Giro?
I think Kelderman is the perfect man for that spot. And I'd argue that when we look at 2021, we had a team of Dumoulin, and Foz going to the Giro. The Foz experiment, I wouldn't say it's completely bottled yet. I think if you try him at one-week races and try him again at a Grand Tour as a secondary GC rider, co-leader, for example, with Kelderman at the Giro, that is something I would like to see happen. And if Foz doesn't prove himself there, he can fall into a domestique role for Kelderman. But I see Kelderman as the GC leader for the Giro next year, because in my opinion, they should still send Vingegaard and Roglic both to the Tour de France. That's my take. We might see next year if that happens or does not happen. Now, I also think that Kelderman should be in the Tour de France team next year, and he should be a domestique, because that's an extra mountain rider added to there. I know that when the Van Baarle discussion happened earlier, that you mentioned that the team should stay the same. You probably forgot that Kelderman was being signed, because I think you agree that he should be in the team.
It depends who. He'll be fighting Kruijswijk for that position. There's Kuss, Benoit, I forgot, Van Hooydonk, Laporte. It depends on the parcours. I mean, if there's no cobbled stage, Benji, do you need all of Van Hooydonk, Laporte, Van Aert, Benoit, four rouleurs?
Yeah.
Like, if it's not in Denmark, if it's if it starts in the Basque Country next year, do you want does Kelderman replace I don't know. That's something to, you know, it depends on the parcours. But yeah, like Foss, Benji, he's had 30 race days this year and didn't get taken to a Vuelta that abounds with 5 to 7% climbs for a bigger guy like him as a domestique. And the Jumbo Visma Vuelta team, no offense, but it ain't their Tour de France team either. And Foss didn't make the cut for that team. He's 25. He's turning 26 next year. And Dumoulin's retired. It's pretty clear that they're shallow in GC and top level, even like Kruijswijk, he's crashed a lot, but he did well on Solaison. But I think there's Kruijswijk, Kuss as climbing domestiques, and then not too much else. So the Kelderman signing just makes a lot of sense. And from his perspective, Benji, I would be thinking, I want to win a race. I still have the legs. Like, I want to get some wins on the board. So it makes sense that he's going to Jumbo Visma, I guess, for that.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think he's going to win races at Jumbo Visma, at least one. Come on. We finally got to have the Kelderman victory. Whether they send him to, like, Tour de Hungary or something, I don't care.
No, they should. If I was in charge of his, like, I would get him. Get the guys just some easy win, like some easy mental victories. I think
open
it's
the floodgates.
Yeah.
And then the Kelderman wins will keep flowing in one by one throughout the season.
It's like Almeida Polonia last year. Remember before Polonia, he kept, he was like, how's this guy not winning races? And then open the floodgates.
Well, has he won that much since?
He won two the week before. Right. I said he can't, you said he's a useless, winless.
I did not say that. You invented that.
He won two Bologna stages and GC, I think.
I did not say that statement. I deny it. But I think this does have a factor or an influence on the other part of Jumbo-Visma. We look at Olaf Kooi being in this team. David Dekker not re-signed yet, from what I can tell. And I'd argue that David Dekker does not fit in the team of Jumbo anymore.
No.
I don't mean that harshly towards David Dekker or anything, but we've got a Grand Tour squad for the Tour de France that will not have a sprinter in it, because Wout van Aert can take green and be a domestique. So Olaf Kooi is the best sprinter on Jumbo-Visma. They should send him to the Giro combined with Kelderman, in my opinion. Sorry, but Olaf Kooi deserves a Grand Tour with flat sprints in it, because he's going to win a Grand Tour stage next year if they send him to a Grand Tour. Now, the issue that I see is David Dekker. Yeah, he's got no opportunities there. But if you're Olaf Kooi, at what point are you going to say, I don't want to be the guy that goes to the Giro and the Vuelta for Grand Tour stage wins. I want to go to the Tour de France. Is that in 2 years? And you're like, okay, they have to start choosing between Wout van Aert and Kooi then, or am I thinking too far?
That's a 2024 discussion, which is his contract is last year, is next year. He's 20 years old. He's won his first World Tour stage this year. I don't think. You need a big a big set of cojones to be like a Primoz and Jonas. Pretty good tour this year, but I would like three lead out riders and Tour de France. I would like to go for my chances with Wout and the team. So I don't really see that as a discussion, at least coming up this year. I think Giro fits. I would send a split squad of Tosh van der Sande, Dennis, Kelderman, Foss maybe, plus Coy, and one of the Van Dijk brothers. I mean, you've seen
him. Bauman.
Bauman, sorry. You've seen a Tour of Denmark. When Coy has Laporte as a leader, it's like, I know it's not Tour de France sprint, but it's not even close. I think they should sign a proper last man for him. I don't know if Affini is that guy. I think Affini at the Giro is a fine setup man, but a proper last man. Can Rosen do it? I'd like to see them get a specialist in for Olav Coy. But Kelderman, yeah, what do you think, Benji? I think he crashes a lot. They got Kreuzweig, Kelderman, Roglic. I think he podiums the Giro, and I think he wins a random TT.
Okay. I think he just wins the stage, and he's going to go for GC at the Giro, and he's going to get a top five there if he can finish it in one piece. The thing is, they don't have Tony Martin anymore, so there's one rider that you're behind that you're scared. That's Tony Martin and perhaps Geraint Thomas as well. So that's one of those two riders that's out of the peloton. No offense to Tony Martin, great rider, but let's be honest about it. And I think that reduces the crashes on Jumbo.
Not convinced. But yeah, we'll see. Kelderman uphill can go super, super fast. He's in ice weight for it as a domestique. I think it's a fine signing. Don't know the money for all these signings, which is unfortunate. Like, it really would add a lot. Like, you could be like, because if Carapaz is on some ridiculous deal where he wanted to go to EF and he's on like 1.5, you're like, well, that is the best transfer I've ever seen. Or maybe riders get one result which they can't replicate, and then they get really, really highly paid, and you're like, not sure about that. So it's impossible to really know. All we can really discuss is fit and expectations for races they'll go to. But yeah, that was the transfers part to wrap up. Let us know what you think about the transfers. Thanks to Zwift, as always, for supporting the show. And we'll see you with Vuelta, probably stage three later today. Ciao.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.